We've reached the All-Star break in Major League Baseball, which means it's a great time for another Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm joined by beat reporters Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak, and today we'll discuss the first half of the season, the All-Star game itself, and then look ahead to the second half. You know, so first things first, we'll start, you know, with that first half of the season, which put the Brewers, finished with the Brewers in first place in the Central Division by 5.5 games over the reigning champion Cubs. Guys, you know, what stands out to you from that first half?
Well, I'd have to say, Matt, many things. When I wrote about the 10 things that, 10 reasons for the Brewers being in first place in the, Monday Journal Sentinel, I didn't have any trouble coming up with 10 reasons. You know, sometimes you feel like you have to stretch and, but I was actually eliminating things. And, you know, whenever a team, especially a young rebuilding team with not a lot of experience, overachieves, to this extent, there's always a lot of reasons why. And, you know, they have a lot of players playing the best they've played in their brief careers. They have, more depth than probably you could have anticipated. They overcame adversity and whenever they found it in the first half. And so just many, many things, have led to it. And, you know, a 5.5 game lead is nothing to sneeze at either. No Brewers team had ever built a 5.5 game lead at the break. Not even the 82 Brewers who went on to the World Series were up by that much. They had a 3.5 game lead. So just to have this type of margin, whether you're expected to or not, is somewhat historic in Brewers franchise history.
Here, I guess from my perspective, the thing, you know, looking at the what they did, what they didn't do, the roster, et cetera, Tom just touched on it a little bit, but I think the depth has been one of the most impressive things. You know, Craig Counsell had begun joking with us in spring training about how there's not a bench, there's not a group of starters, it's position player group, and we kind of rolled our eyes at the time, and it's really kind of proven true. I mean, this team has got tremendous depth from top to bottom, and he's able to plug in guys and really not skip a beat. You know, you take out Eric Thames for a day, no problem. Plug in Jesus Aguilar and he produces. You can put Hernan Perez pretty much anywhere. And being able to do that, it has been a huge boost, obviously, for these guys. They've been hitting for power. Obviously, this is one of the more impressive power hitting teams in recent memory that they've had, which is saying something. So that's just a couple things that kind of stood out for me here in the first half.
You know, and obviously they've had a lot of guys step up and make major contributions. Is there anyone in particular that stands out to you, Tom, in the way that they have, you know, really kind of risen to the occasion so far?
Well, before he got hurt, right-hander Chase Anderson was having the best season of his young career. Jimmy Nelson is having the best season of his career. So they have two starting pitchers who have really stepped forward. As far as the position players, you have Eric Thames. We didn't know what to expect from after 3 years in Korea. And he you know, set the club record with 11 home runs in April and got off to a tremendous start. Travis Shaw, he's probably their first half MVP. When the Brewers traded for him and gave him third base and made him the cleanup hitter, everybody wondered what to expect because he had fallen out of favor quickly in Boston. And all he's done is been their most consistent run producer. So it's been many guys. And I think the most impressive part of what the Brewers have done is that they've done it with Ryan Braun missing more than half the games with injuries, with their leadoff hitter, Jonathan Villar, having a bad first half, with Junior Guerra, their number one starter, getting hurt on opening day, missing 6 weeks and struggling to find his form. And then the closer that they signed over the offseason, Neftali Feliz for over $5 million, was so bad that they've already cut him. And they ended up with they found an all-star by doing that. Corey Knebel became the closer, became a first-half all-star. So just look at the things that they've had to overcome, and that makes it even more impressive that they're in first place.
You know, and kind of looking at their division a little bit, you know, Todd, how would you kind of assess the Central? It's kind of seemingly fallen off a little bit with the Cubs and Cardinals both being under 500, which is not where you'd expect those teams to be.
Yeah, it's been an interesting season so far in the NL Central. Obviously, the Cubs have played below expectations, I think, what everybody was expecting from them coming in. They made a big move this morning to trade for Jose Quintana, traded a big haul of prospects to bring him in, but that's exactly the kind of move that you would expect the Cubs to try to make to overtake the Brewers here in the second half. The rest of the Central Division just has not been very inspiring. The St. Louis Cardinals are looking very mortal. Many of the guys that they've relied on in years past, and some of the bigger names, they're getting older. They're not producing like they were, and their farm system is not able to plug in those ready-made guys like they had in the past. The Pirates have struggled, obviously. Losing Starling Marte early in the season was a big blow for them, and they've just kind of been treading water. And you know, the Reds have been bringing up the bottom end of the division. They've been better, I think, than expected, but still, you know, not nearly good enough to contend. So, you know, the Brewers are benefiting obviously from playing well, but also playing in a division that the rest of the teams that you would expect to be challenging to this point have not done so.
Yeah. And Matt, that's just a big part of this. We cannot, downplay that the reason the Brewers have a 5.5 game lead is because nobody else in the division even has a winning record. That's just circumstances are a big part of any team's season. If you put the Brewers in the NL West, they'd be in fourth place behind the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and the Rockies. But they're not. They're in the NL Central. And none of the other teams have done well, and so the Brewers have stepped into that void. But that's a big part of it. And if the Cardinals and the Cubs aren't going to get going, then the Brewers their view is, why not us? You know, if those guys don't want to win, why not us? So it's going to get harder from now on because there's more pressure with in the second half of a season when you're in a race. But you know, you have to give them credit for playing better than expected and taking advantage of the circumstances of the division being down. And when you're in it, you're in it. And they're early on in their rebuild, and they're certainly not going to blow up their overall plan, but you never, ever take lightly being in a pennant race. And I spoke with both principal owner Mark Attanasio and general manager David Stearns last weekend in New York when the Brewers are there playing the Yankees, and they made it quite clear they're taking this seriously and they're going to look around and see what can or can't be done to improve the team. So if this is, you know, there's no guarantee that next year that it'll be like this. The Brewers could be like 12 games over 500, but if some other teams like Red Hot they're not in it. So you take these seasons year by year, and this is why Craig Counsell said very often in spring training, we're not going to set limits on this team. I know people don't expect us to contend, but we're not going to set the bar low. We're going to see how good we can be. And I just think that entire attitude of, you know, we're going to see how good we can be instead of worrying about what people outside expect from us, I think that's been a big part of all of this.
You know, and we'll kind of delve into some of that more as we look ahead into the second half of the season. But before that, you know, let's take a minute to kind of talk about the All-Star Week and the things that happened there. Is there anything that stood out to you guys about, you know, either the Futures game or the Home Run Derby or the game itself in which Brewers closer Corey Knebel did not appear at all in a 10-inning game?
Well, the Futures game obviously was a nice little advertisement for the Brewers minor league system, having three guys in there, including top prospect Lewis Brinson, who played well. You know, obviously the three guys that played in there for the Brewers, Brinson, Corey Ray, and Mauricio Dubon, are all guys who factor into the Brewers' long-term plan. So to be able to have multiple guys in that, which is just a huge showcase a couple days before the All-Star game, is big. And those are guys that true, you know, diehard Brewer fans obviously know, maybe the casual fans weren't really familiar with. So it was a good kind of coming out party introduction. And those are names that all of us will be seeing here in the coming years, and we've already seen Brinson and could possibly see him again in the second half.
And, Matt, I thought the game itself was very indicative of just the way baseball is being played these days. It was a lot of strikeouts. Of course, that's always the case in the All-Star game because the greatest pitchers in baseball are pitching in it. But then a couple of home runs, you know, and then one home run decides it. And that's just kind of the way baseball has been this year. It's, home runs are up, strikeouts are up, lots of great pitching performances. We're just in an era of baseball where home runs and strikeouts are the predominant factors. As talks about, are the baseballs juiced? Are the bats juiced? Why do so many guys strike out now? And it's just, the way the game has evolved now, the analytics like home runs. They don't necessarily like strikeouts, but they don't really hate them. I just thought the game itself kind of went the way baseball's going in general right now. And, you know, it's unfortunate that Corey Knebel did not appear. He, by all appearances, he was going to pitch the 11th inning if it made it to the 11th inning, but Robinson Cano won it for the American League with a home run in the 10th off Wade Davis of the Cubs. So I think secretly nobody in the Brewers front office is agonizing that Corey Knebel didn't pitch, because he threw 16 pitches Saturday in New York and a whopping 33 on Sunday to save that game to get four outs. So he had thrown 49 pitches in 2 days, and it would have only had one day off Monday before having to pitch Tuesday. So they've ridden this bullpen hard to get to this point. Knebel, Carlos Torres, and Jacob Barnes are all in the top 10 in appearances in the National League. That's a lot to have three guys up that high, and it's something they have to monitor in the second half. So it sounds like he had a good All-Star experience. It's great that he's already evolved into an All-Star closer. You probably couldn't see that coming either. Just one more of the surprises on the team. And I just want to reemphasize what we're seeing him do, where he strikes out at least one guy every time he pitches. You know, 43 times now he's done that. How extraordinary that is, you know, to never have an outing where you don't strike out at least one guy. And on Sunday in New York, he struck out the last three guys. And they were star players too, you know, Aaron Judge and Didi Gregorius and Gary Sanchez. So just what Corey Knebel is doing this year is quite extraordinary, and he is a very deserving All-Star.
You know, and when it comes to him not pitching in the All-Star game, do you think, you know, anyone focuses on that more, like especially fans, do they focus on that more because of who the manager was for the National League? You know, if it had been some manager from an NL West team or an NL East team, would they have cared?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, because it's the Cubs manager picking the Cubs pitcher, right? Well, guess what? The Cubs manager has to live with the Cubs pitcher, you know? So he's going to try to take care of him and have things be good in his own clubhouse than worrying about, you know, whether Corey Knebel pitches ahead of him. So I do think it was irksome to Brewers fans that it was a Cubs factor involved. If it was a different manager and a different pitcher, you know, then probably they would not have been as bothered by it. But again, I know you want to pitch in the All-Star game if you can, but this is not a terrible thing that Corey Knebel got some rest.
Yeah, and when it comes to the second half of the season, you know, what are you guys looking for or expecting, you know, if the Brewers are going to keep up what they're doing? You know, what are some of the factors that they would need to either continue to do or improve upon in order to stay where they are right now?
Well, I think one of the big factors is going to be the starting pitching moving forward. Obviously, they're going to need Jimmy Nelson to continue the role that he's been on. Zach Davies, he's already double digits in victories, but he's going to have to continue to get better, get that ERA down, and start getting deeper into games. That was one of the kind of the downfalls for him in the first half. And I think getting Chase Anderson back to health is going to be big for this team. And certainly they're not going to rush him or rush that injury. Oblique injuries are very nebulous and very bad. I mean, these things take time to heal. but he was on such a tremendous roll and was really developing into such a reliable starting pitcher for the Brewers that's a guy that I really think that they need back badly, and a guy who they need to kind of hit the ground running, so to speak. So, you know, you get him back, it's almost like making a trade around the deadline if you can get him back in that amount of time, and you add that arm to the rotation, that gives you a big boost. So I think the starting pitching is really going to be where it's at. And do they go out and do they make another move? You know, like answer the Cubs, I certainly wouldn't expect them to, you know, trade a big haul of prospects to bring in a starting pitcher. But, you know, maybe they can make a secondary move, a move just to kind of shore things up and not have to give up a big parcel of prospects to do it. So that's another thing that I think it'll be interesting to watch. Maybe they add a bullpen arm or two moving forward. The trade deadline coming up, and at the end of the month, that's something I know that all fans get excited about. And, you know, will the Brewers be buyers?
I agree with Todd that the starting pitching is going to be huge. You know, every time we forget that the pitching is the most important part of the game, we get reminded that it is in one way or another, either positively or negatively with the team. And starting pitching is what gives you the chance to win day in and day out. And it's certainly no coincidence that the Brewers closed with a really strong couple of weeks when their starting pitching was pitching very well. Except for Junior Guerra, the other four guys, you know, did a very good job through a couple of turns through the rotation. And Brent Suter really filled in nicely twice for Chase Anderson, and is now going to get at least one more chance to do so. And so that continues. But they're, you know, even I was surprised when I was going through and looking at the starting rotation rankings in the National League that the Brewers had moved up to number 5. In ERA and rotation, because they had been quite lower than that for much of the first half. So their improved play was definitely linked to improved pitching from their rotation, and that's going to have to continue.
You know, and looking further than the rotation, do you think that, you know, some of the play of guys like Thames and Shaw and Sogard and the guys who have stepped up early in the season, those position players, you know, how much of that, you know, can continue, you know, heading into the stretch run as teams get better scouting reports on them and kind of, you know, pitchers know how to attack them a little bit more?
I you know, Travis Shaw has been incredibly consistent, and I would expect that to continue. Tom wrote a very interesting story about the ups and downs of Eric Thames, and he seems to have been affected a little bit more by, you know, how teams are counteracting his success at the plate, and very streaky, very hot or very cold, one or the other. So, you know, maybe he's a player, maybe he's a name that will be affected a little bit more by that. But, you know, by this point in time in the season, the book's out on these guys. Teams know how to attack these hitters. And there really aren't many secrets. It's up to the guys at the plate to make adjustments and to counteract that. And I would expect, you know, like I said, Shaw to continue to roll. I would think Thames, with the amount of work he does and how cerebral he is with his approach, I would expect him to have at least a decent second half, continue to hit some home runs. And, you know, then you add in a guy like, you know, Ryan Braun, if he's able to remain healthy, it's almost like, again, getting a guy like him and the caliber of his bat in the middle of the lineup, get him going and get him hot offensively. That'd be a huge lift for the Brewers in general.
Yeah, I do think that what Braun is able to do is going to, you know, that's the X factor right now, because he really didn't, you know, he only played in 40 of the 91 games in the first half, and they filled in nicely. Hernan Perez made a lot of starts in left field, and let's see what happens at second base, too, because Jonathan Villar had played himself out of being the primary second baseman because Eric Sogard came up and just absolutely was on fire. But then Sogard injured an ankle, didn't really play the last couple of weeks, went on the DL. And so they were just forced to play Villar over there a lot. And in the last few games, he actually, you know, started swinging the bat a little better. He had 3 hits in the final game on Sunday, and he a little modest 5-game hitting streak going into the break. So, you know, Villar was a dynamic player for him last year, and he has been not even close to that this year. So if he either perks up and starts producing, or Sogard, you know, recovers from that ankle injury, and I don't know if he can continue the pace he was on before he got hurt, but just anything close to it, you know, they'll get some production out of that leadoff spot in the lineup, which is huge. And you know, the Brewers have been uncanny in scoring early in games. I think one of the big parts of their success in the first half was that they played from the lead a lot, which takes pressure off of a young team and pressure off of your starting pitchers. They scored 81 runs in the first inning in 91 games, an extraordinary number of runs early on. So whatever they're doing for their pregame prep, they need to keep doing it, because they come out ready to play, and playing from in front, especially with a young and experienced team, is way easier than trying to play catch up every game.
You know, and obviously you guys have mentioned, you know, kind of the injuries and kind of getting healthy and seeing what players like Ryan Braun can do in the second half. Obviously, you know, the All-Star break helps every team that has injuries with kind of getting a little bit healthier, getting a little bit of rest. Does the All-Star break hurt the Brewers at all in the sense that, you know, they were 8-2 in their 10 games before the break, you know, the second best in the NL in that 10-game span? You know, does that hurt their momentum at all, do you think?
I don't think so, because, you know, everybody else is on break too. So, you know, they're all in the same. I think everybody, you know, needs some time off and looks forward to it. And, you know, I noted earlier that their bullpen's been very heavily used, and so it's certainly not going to hurt them for those guys to have a few days off. So, no, I think it lets you catch your breath a little bit, and, you know, they'll reconvene tonight and work out. And then, you know, they only play three games at home before they go on a very long road trip. And then they have another very long road trip in August, where they go to Colorado, San Francisco, and L.A. So I was trying to figure out, and I'd be interested to hear what Todd thinks about this, whether the second half schedule is a huge challenge or not so much. And this is why I asked that. They play 39 on the road and 32 at home, but they've been a better road team than a home team. They also play 51 of 71 games against teams with losing records, including the Cardinals and the Cubs. But, you know, they go on the road and they got to play, they still have two series with Washington. They've got to go out to LA with the Dodgers, just hardly ever lose. So, Todd, I'm a little conflicted as to, you know, whether the second half schedule is really hard for them or not so much. Well, I mean, it's a lot of different ways to look at it, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to note that, you know, building off of Matt's question, that going into the second half here, schedule is favorable to them. They host Philadelphia, obviously a rebuilding team, and then they go on the road to Pittsburgh and to Philadelphia. So it's not like you're having to open the second half with a West Coast swing like going to L.A. and San Francisco. But yeah, the road thing is interesting. It's intriguing, and we've asked Craig Counsell about it several times. And, you know, is this a team, a young, mostly inexperienced team that just doesn't know any better? That just, you know, hey, road, home, whatever, we're going to go out and we're going to compete and we're going to win. Yeah, Brewer teams in years past just did not, for whatever reason, did not play well on the road. Ron Renicki's teams, for whatever reason, just did not play well on the road that 2000, even 2011. They were not great away from Miller Park. It's kind of been added an interesting twist to this group, the fact that they do play better away from Miller Park, and they certainly will need that to continue here in the second half with the schedule being skewed away from Miller Park and to the road games.
We've joked, Matt, that they're so young and inexperienced that Miller Park doesn't mean as much to them as it might if it was guys who had played there forever, and that, you know, it's all the same to them whether it's home and away. But, you know, they did start to play a little bit better at home the last, you know, several weeks. They had been below 500 at home, but yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, the good news is they play a lot of teams with losing records. The bad news is they play a lot of road games, including two very long trips. You know, long trips generally, you know, sap some energy out of you because you're just not sleeping in your own bed and you're just away a long time. So it's just going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. They have 10 games left with the Cubs and 8 with the Cardinals. So it's certainly within the ability of the teams behind them to take things in their own hands and close on the Brewers.
You know, and you mentioned those really long trips. I think it's worth noting that the first really long trip ends with 3 games at Washington, and the second one ends with 3 games at the Dodgers. And if, you know, obviously if the Brewers could schedule those trips and, you know, rearrange them, they'd probably want to start with those teams and end them with other teams, that might be more favorable or, you know, as for when they're at the point where they're kind of maybe hitting the wall a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes the trips harder at the end. And to take it a step further, Matt, when they finish this long road trip that Todd was talking about that starts in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, when they go to Washington, then they come home off of that and play 3 at home against the Cubs and then 3 against the Cardinals. So, it's going to be very telling late July and into August. Just what happens. And then they go and play 2 teams that are having good years on the road, Tampa Bay and Minnesota on the road too. So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be challenging. They'll have more of a spotlight on them in the second half. You know, they sort of snuck up on everybody in the first half and went under the radar. And it was interesting last week in New York, Matt and Todd, just how much national press was all of a sudden paying attention to them. Because, you know, it's like it's when you're in New York, everything's bigger there and you're finally on the big stage. And they had a long line of national scribes and then some radio TV folks checking in on them too. And so things are a little bit different when players are out on the field before BP taking selfies with J-Lo and then Mark Attanasio sitting with Paul Simon watching the first game of the series.
I seldom watch ESPN Sports Center, and I was on the treadmill last night at the gym, and they even did a feature on the Brewers and what they've done in the first half. So that was pretty eye opening to me. I mean, when's the last time you've seen a national show like ESPN Sports Center focus on the Brewers? It just normally does not happen.
And so as more people pay attention to them, you know, the pressure is going to ramp up on them.
You know, and is this the type of, you know, kind of young team that hasn't been there before? They don't know any better, you know, when it comes to pressure. Do you think that kind of chemistry and that, you know, mentality can kind of translate from not really being affected by the road to not being affected by the pressure? Or is pressure a whole different animal?
Well, they do have great chemistry. It's one of the very interesting things about the team because, as I've written more than once this year, that logically speaking, that they should not have great chemistry. These guys have not been together that long. Most of them have come from different clubs. They didn't come up together through the minor leagues. So how the heck did they build this chemistry so fast? It's been one of the most fascinating things about them. And let's face it, it's easier to have some nice chemistry when you're doing well as a team and when you're doing well individually too. You don't see a whole lot of great chemistry in clubhouses that the teams are having bad times on the field. So those two things do go together. But it is a very interesting thing. And I know Todd and I have talked about it a lot. You go in that clubhouse, and it's kind of a loosey-goosey bunch. You know, oddly enough, and I'll be interested if Todd has a different take on this, a lot of it, to me, flows out of their – burgeoning Latin America contingent of players. Those guys are close together and they have a lot of fun, and I think you see it exude beyond them to the other players. Do you agree with that, Todd?
Yeah, I do. They're fun to watch. It's a very tight-knit group. Those guys are always together, always yucking it up, very loud, very boisterous, but in a good way. And I think that can definitely be contagious. It helps set the mood in the clubhouse. It's very loosey-goosey. You know, you do have some veterans in there who know how to comport themselves, so to speak. And that's not to say that these guys are doing anything wrong, but you know, you've got kind of an interesting counterbalance. And when you're able to have that kind of camaraderie, I think it's a good thing. These guys, it's pretty clear they all like each other. They like each other a lot. I mean, you watch the games and guy hits a home run and they've got that receiving line in the dugout and everybody's doing it and jumping around and having a good time. That's a good thing. You know, that's a good thing for a team in the Brewers' position, pushing like they are.
And
hey, I was just going to add to that. You, Matt, you should see, Hernan Perez's 4-year-old son, Chris. The Brewers should sign him right now. I'm just going to just say that right now. Just sign him right now. Give him a multi-year contract. And, you know, when he gets old enough, start playing him. He's in there, and he's the most advanced 4-year-old you'll ever see. He's like 4 going on 12. You know, he can throw. He can hit. He can do everything. And he's in there, and the guys are having fun with him and pitching to him. And, I mean, Todd and me, we, you know, you have to sometimes duck in there because there's some like balls flying around in the, clubhouse and just stuff like that. Just him bringing his kid in and the guys having fun with him. And this is a tight knit bunch. And, Stephen Vogt, who's only been with the team a few weeks after getting claimed from Oakland, said he felt it right away. And, you know, they have that chant, I believe in Stephen Vogt. I believe in Stephen Vogt. That's, you know, I think that comes from soccer, right? I believe that we will win. Isn't it like a World Cup chant?
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. And so I guess that had started in San Francisco. And now, like, you know, he hits a home run. He comes back to the dugout and there's guys chanting, I believe in Stephen Vogt. So these guys sort of get it, as far as, what's good with the team camaraderie and what's not.
Yeah, and I was kind of going to ask a little bit more about that. In years past, what has the clubhouse been like? You know, obviously there are good elements and bad elements to it, you know, in any clubhouse, really. But what's it been like in the past couple of years that was, you know, maybe different?
I'll just say it like this. I mean, Tom obviously has more experience. He's covered the team a lot longer. This is my 7th year. My first year covering the Brewers was the 2011 team that almost made it to the World Series. And I can say that this clubhouse is as tight-knit and as fun a group of guys as that 2011 team, or since that 2011 team, I should say. Every year is different group of guys, different chemistry, different mix. You know, 2012, there were a lot of holdovers from that 2011 team, so there was still some life and some spunk to that group. But, you know, from probably 2013 on, it was relatively kind of nondescript, I would say. I guess maybe Tom could add to that. But, this is the first year to me since 2011 where you really kind of feel that unity and that bond and guys filling roles in the clubhouse and the leadership and all that kind of stuff. It's all kind of coming to the forefront. And, you know, obviously leading the division heading into the second half has a big part in that, plays a big role in that. But I think it's just a very interesting mix of personalities, a bunch of guys that get along real well. This was formulated in spring training and it just carried on over. Guys, you know, like Eric Sogard, who were with the team in spring training, they go away, they go to AAA, play for a while, they come in and boom, they're like one of the group. No, they jump right in like they never skipped a beat. A guy like Stephen Vogt, new to the team, jumped right in, hasn't missed a beat. So that's been interesting, but to me, this is the best chemistry I've seen since 2011.
And let's make sure that we give credit to manager Craig Counsell and his coaching staff for fostering a very positive atmosphere. You know, when they knew that they were going to be stripping the team down, and trading off veterans and getting prospects and finding some of these other players in the interim to fill the roster through waiver claims and trades and stuff like that. They knew that could be negative if you let it be because, you know, veterans being traded, you know, the prospects aren't up in the majors yet. What are we doing here? What's the plan? You know, are we, and then the guys stuck in the middle, you know, are they going to be part of it or just transitional? So it has a chance to be a negative atmosphere, but David Stearns and Craig Counsell talked about it a lot at the outset of their careers about let's make this a positive thing. Let's try to have a positive culture, an encouraging culture, a fostering culture. And Craig has not been that far removed from playing himself, and so you know, he relates to the players and sort of knows what they're going through. And that's been a big part of it too. So, you know, the players often take their cues from up above, and these guys, you know, they've tried to be teachers, but also, you know, big brothers or fathers figures for these guys, and just help them out in any way they can. It's a constant learning process, a constant evolution for these young guys. There's lots of adjustments that have to be made. The learning never stops, but they've tried to do it all in a positive fashion, a nurturing fashion.
You know, and kind of forecasting ahead, right now we all know the Brewers are in first place. You know, when you drive into Milwaukee, they have billboards that have the division standings on them, you know, kind of bragging a little bit, especially for people coming from the South. You know, and, you know, that's all well and good, but the important thing for them is to be in that spot when the season comes to an end. And right now, looking at FanGraphs projections, you know, the Brewers have the third best playoff odds in their own division, despite being in first place. You know, so is this a time for people to kind of have their hopes up and have high expectations, or are there still reasons to be kind of apprehensive right now heading into the second part of the season?
I look at it like this. Who expected the Brewers to be in this position right now, aside from maybe the Brewers? Nobody. So as a fan, you're playing with house money, right? Enjoy the ride. It would be great if you're a Brewer fan to see the Brewers hang on and win this thing or get into the playoffs via the wild card. You know, the projections, the predictions, the percentages, all that stuff, just leave it alone. Just watch and enjoy it. You know, do they make a trade? Does Ryan Braun really blow up in the second half here? Does Chase Anderson come back and pitch the way he was in the first half? Does a guy like Lewis Brinson come up and all of a sudden explode on September 1st? All these things, to me, if you're a fan, it's just fun to watch. Whether you want them to hang on, obviously, but the fact that we're talking about this in the middle of July, that the Brewers have a 5.5-game lead in the NL Central is really mind-blowing when you think about it. Year two of the rebuild. So to me, it's like, if you're a fan, just enjoy it. Watch it and enjoy it, and hopefully you hang on and you beat out the Cubs. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, no matter what happens in the second half, you can look at what the Brewers have done to this point and say, the one thing we do know is they're on the right path, right? You know, this is a bit large-scale rebuilding project, and their goal is to be consistent every year, not just have an occasional breakthrough and then fall back like they have in the past. So if they are able to do this well this soon into the rebuild, at least you know that they're heading in the right direction and that they've made good decisions thus far. And the farm system is loaded with players that are going to be coming up in the next few years too, and they hope that they're going to create even more competition within their own ranks and get even younger and better. So, you know, what Todd said is right. Don't sit and worry and have angst about can they keep doing this. Just say, look what they've done, and it should be exciting to Brewers fans about what may or may not happen in the second half. And it's way better than people thought it was going to be. I don't think many people thought we were going to be talking a whole lot about the Brewers at this stage of the season. I think most people were probably figuring they'd already be talking about Packers summer camp opening.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually, you know, at least last year, that's what people were talking about at this point. And now the Brewers are, you know, kind of front and center in Milwaukee and look like they'll be that way for, you know, the foreseeable future heading down the stretch. And before I let you guys go, just wanted to ask one last question about, you know, what your favorite road experience has been so far this season. Obviously, you're only through a little bit more than half the schedule, but, you know, what have your favorite road experiences been so far?
Tom, you were just on the road last, so you can start.
Yeah, I mean, New York, there's always lots to do there. It was kind of a real quick, busy weekend in and out. My least favorite was going to the airport for my flight to Toronto and finding out the flight didn't exist. I can definitely put that at the list of things that was not enjoyable. We won't get into the details of that, but there was a snafu in the scheduling of that flight. But I did, you know, I got to go to Atlanta to see their new ballpark. That was nice. And Todd, I think, can vouch that Turner Field, not the greatest place to go to, certainly not the greatest area. And they're out in the suburbs now, and so it was just interesting doing that. So I'd say that would just see anytime you get to go to a new ballpark, it's fun. And so I'll probably put that right up at the top of the list. I'm guessing Todd's favorite experience was that day-night doubleheader in St. Louis. Those are always fun.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, for me it was a real bonus to spend 26 hours at the ballpark there in St. Louis covering the doubleheader on that Tuesday and then having two rain delays the next night. That was really great. So, Tom, I like to give you kudos for coming up with that scheduling gem for me. Of course, having to go down to Wrigley Field again for that rain out last week, that was a blast too. But it actually was an interesting game to watch and to cover. To see the Brewers win the way they did was pretty remarkable. My travel was pretty nondescript at this point. I do have the big trip coming out of the All-Star break here, the first part of the trip with Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And a trip to Philadelphia, as any beat writer knows in baseball, means Graham Slam ice cream in the press box served up by Frank. That's always a huge deal. To me, Philadelphia has the best media spread in the major leagues, or at least they're in the top three. So I look forward to gorging on ice cream and probably gaining 5 pounds over next weekend when I'm out there. So that's something that I'm looking forward to in the second half, Matt.
Todd, I hate to break this to you, but some of us in the press box were noticing a release out of Philadelphia recently that said that ice cream company was discontinuing Grand Slam.
Well, I can do you one better than that, Tom. They came out with an update later on saying that they have not indeed discontinued Grand Slam, and it is in the press box, confirmed by multiple beat writers. So it was on the docket. I will be eating a lot of it. I'll let you know how good it is.
Did sports writers across America send in donations to get them to continue Graham Slam ice cream?
They were out picketing in front of Turkey Hill Creamery. I think that's the name of the company that makes it. So, yeah, said Turkey Hill. Actually, they serve it at the ballpark. That they explained it. That's the only place that they're going to serve it now is at the ballpark out there in Philadelphia. And it's only, you can only purchase it in like 5 gallon drums or something like that. So maybe I'll purchase a couple and ship it back, one for each of us for the second half.
We'll hold you to it.
Matt, I can now say we have not talked about anything more important all day long here in this podcast than the fact that Graham Slam ice cream still exists.
Yes.
You know, we're bringing the important information to our listeners.
Yes, and if for those listening who have not tried it and have the opportunity when they're out there, do it. It is the best ice cream you will ever have.
It is outstanding.
All right, so with that very important tip, I think we'll leave you with that. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this latest edition of the Milwaukee Brewers podcast. As always, you can follow the work of Tom and Todd at jsonline.com/brewers. You can also find them on the JS Brewers app. And you can find our latest podcasts on iTunes and anywhere else that you get your podcast. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again later this summer.